My name's John, and I've been gone for a couple weeks myself. I got to go back to Fort Collins. I got to go to Chicago and got in kind of late last night. So we don't have any PowerPoint this morning, but we do have, I think, some good stuff to pass on. And we're in a series on the fruit of the Spirit. I guess you guys haven't had any fruit of the Spirit for 2 weeks now, right? Because Brandon didn't do it and Owen didn't do it. Okay, so we're ready. Yeah, patiently waiting. Patiently waiting for the one on patience. Yeah, well, we are going to talk about that one today, and we're also going to talk about, how do they go? It goes, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Yeah, nine of them. Yep, okay. So we're going to do three of them today. We're going to do patience, kindness, and goodness. Okay, that's an amazing trio right there. And we're just going to roll through those three. But we're really going to talk about just more thoughts on being in the Spirit and how you and I can make choices to have that be true in our life. All right? So when we think about the subject of patience, we don't live in a very patient world. Think about the different places you're at, whether it's the line in the grocery store or driving around or whatever. When you start thinking about our world, one of the things that comes pretty clear is everything's moving at a pretty fast pace, and if somebody is a speed bump in that, the people behind them are generally not patient. It's a quality that is almost, I think, almost non-existent in our world. And I was just reminded about that last night. I've been thinking about coming here, talking about the fruits of the Spirit, talking about patience, and I'm in the Salt Lake Airport, and I'm in the TSA pre-line, which if you haven't flown a lot lately, there's a new program that if you fly a lot, you can get in this TSA pre-program, and it's like security for human beings. You don't have to take your shoes off. You don't have to take your belt off. You don't have to take every little thing out and spread it all over. You can leave your coat on. You just sort of walk through, and they assume you're an okay guy. And so it's just a lot faster. It's a lot simpler. And it actually makes it like workable. So I got to be part of that program, and I'm in the TSA pre-line. And there's a number of people there. And two people ahead of me, there's this teenage girl. And she's doesn't look like she's flown a lot, but she's in the TSA pre-line, and she rolls through, sticks her stuff on the bin, and it's going through, and she walks through the metal detector thing, and it goes off. So she backs up, and the guy says, "Well, you don't have anything in your pocket," and she takes everything out of her pocket. I think she had her cell phone in her pocket, and she walks through again, and this happened again and again, and she just kept taking things off. And I'm standing, you know, with the person in front of me and then her, and I'm sensing there's just a line backing up in this TSA pre-world, and these guys are not used to standing here waiting on somebody while this little teenage girl tries to figure out what in the world it is that's firing off on this metal detector. And the guy keeps trying to help her figure out what it is. She's got this great big metal watch that weighs about 3 pounds, and she takes that off, and she's got a bunch of other jewelry, and then finally she's got all these great big gold bracelets. So she finally gets it figured out, and I'm looking, and I'm finally starting to pay attention, going, "What's going on? Okay, you know what? I finally got it figured out with this girl," and she gets through, and I'm having this sense of impatience rise in me, like, this is the TSA pre-line. And I know you just sense the whole thing is just sort of coming up and rising, and I get through the metal detector, and I just get so convicted about how, I mean, I'm not in a hurry, I'm not late for my plane, I got nothing going on, and yet I could just sense this impatience in me. It's just a natural person that I am when I'm not filled with the Spirit of God. And I had recognized right there toward the end, here's what's going on with this poor girl. Just like in a microwave, whenever you have something metal that's a ring that creates a circle, unless if it's, you know, if it's bigger than a finger ring, if you've got a piece of metal that creates a circle, you're going to create a magnetic field and you're going to fire it off. And she was, you know, all kinds of things like that. Probably even big earrings would do it. But if you have a big metal circle and you go through a metal detector, you're gonna trip that metal detector. So I just, you know, I explained to her as we were in the end gathering our stuff up. I said, here, you know, here's what's going on with you. And I tried to be really patient with her and said, whenever you go through a metal detector and you have something that creates a ring and it's made out of metal, that's what's going to happen. And she was thankful, and I think she still felt kind of awkward. But the Spirit of God rescued me, and I was able to respond in a way that I wouldn't have responded otherwise. And yet it was such a reminder in how what God wants us to be, we are not naturally. We can maybe get a little ways down that road depending on our personality, but we won't get very far on our own. And our culture keeps pushing us the wrong way. So when we think about love and joy, peace, and this week it's patience, kindness, goodness, I was struck by the fact that I think you and I are really created to need kindness. Kindness is so intensely powerful. And yet we don't get very much kindness. We really live in a world where if you step very far out of the groove that the world expects you to be in, there just is not kindness. It is harsh, it's rejecting, and we all sense that, like, man, I got to keep my life in the right place or there's going to be a lot of negativity coming toward me because somehow I've gotten out of line somewhere. And that's the world of what human life is. That's the world of what we all are when we're not filled with the Spirit of Jesus. And yet, the Spirit of Jesus can make us very different. And I have a couple of kind of historical things that have meant a lot to me and spoken to me over the years. A number of years ago, I saw this quote somewhere. I looked this guy up, but here's this quote. This is a Japanese guy. This is a Japanese Christian that got saved in, would have been, you know, probably around 1900. And he said this. He's talking about his salvation. He says, I read in a book that a man called Christ went about doing good. It's very disconcerting to me that I am so easily satisfied with just going about. Jesus was a man who went around doing good. You and I live in a world where people just go about. They're just doing their own thing. And Jesus lived such an outside-the-box life that when people looked at him, one of the amazing descriptions they wrote of him is, this is a man that went about doing good. And this guy's name was Toyohiko Kagawa. He was the son of a wealthy businessman who had a concubine in Japan. And he was a product of that union. Both his father and mother died when he was young. He was taken to some American missionaries. They taught him English. They brought him into their house. He became a believer and began living a life imitating this one who went around doing good. By the time he died, he'd been nominated for the Nobel Prize in Literature twice and the Nobel Peace Prize twice. He lived an absolutely remarkable life as he pursued a relationship with Christ. And he was often even at odds with the Presbyterian world he went to Presbyterian Seminary in Japan, he spent time in Princeton. But his issue was, these guys are all about the minutiae of the Bible, but they're not about living the Christian life. I just want to share a couple of the things that this man did. In 1940, Kagawa made an apology. This is 1940 now. He made an apology to the Republic of China for Japan's occupation of China. Of course, he went to jail for that. He was living in Japan. He did get out of jail, and then he went to the United States to try to stop war with the United States. Was not able to do that, so then he went back to Japan, and he worked in trying to win women's suffrage. He'd already worked hard in the 20s trying to win universal suffrage for men. He wrote about economics. He wrote about conservation of soil. He helped farmers. He became a man who went about doing good. And Jesus changed his life. Another story I really like, true story. I checked this out with Snopes. I don't think they liked the story, but they said it checks out. About Catherine Laws. 1921, when Lewis Laws became the warden of Sing Sing Correctional Facility in Ossing, New York, it had a reputation for being the toughest prison in the country. The most notorious criminals were sent to this severe and unforgiving place, Sing Sing Prison. But when Laws retired 20 years later, the prison had become a model for the humane treatment of prisoners and the development of rehabilitation programs. Laws instituted theatricals, film showings, athletics, and provided radio earphones for each cell. He also required prisoners to wear identical uniforms to blur distinctions of wealth and status. Yet Laws said his success and the prison's transformation was not his doing. I owe it all to my wonderful wife, Catherine, who is buried outside the prison walls. Catherine Laws was a young mother with three small children when her husband became warden at Sing Sing. Although many people warned her never to set foot inside the prison, she disregarded their advice. When the first prison basketball game was played, she brought her three small children and sat in the stands with the prisoners. Upon learning a convicted murderer was blind, she taught him Braille. When she found a hearing-impaired prisoner, she learned sign language so she could communicate with him. Quietly and lovingly, she worked with prisoners from 1921 until 1937, when she died in a car accident. The next morning, Lewis Laws didn't come to work, so the acting warden took his place. The entire prison population instantly knew something was wrong. The next day, Catherine Laws' body lay in state at her home, 3/4 of a mile from the prison. The acting warden toured the prison that morning and was shocked to see a large crowd of the toughest, most hardened prisoners gathered at the main gate. Even more astonishing were the tears of grief flowing down the cheeks of many men. Spontaneously, the acting warden issued an unheard-of order. He gave the men permission to leave the prison and walk to Law's home where they could pay their final respects. All day long, a parade of convicted felons walked 3/4 of a mile to stand in a line and say goodbye to Catherine Laws. Every single prisoner, though unaccompanied by guards, returned to the prison. No one took advantage of the opportunity to escape. And when you think about the impact that love and kindness and goodness has on human life in our world, and that was the person that Jesus was, and why he so profoundly affected the people that followed him, and that is what the Spirit of Jesus has produced in those who follow him ever since. Not in everyone, obviously, but that's what the Spirit of Jesus does in us when the Spirit of Jesus has his way. And when I read that, I just get really moved. And I go, that's what I want to be like. I want to be one of those people. I want the Spirit of Jesus to do that in me. But we have to realize that the Catherine Laws or Kagawa, they were not people that are naturally that way. In the span of human personality, some people are a little more patient than others. Some people are a little more kind than others. There is a spectrum. We all have different gifts. We all have different things we naturally bring. But to say that those things could be done in the face of opposition, in the face of rejection, day after day after day in human power, is to have a complete misunderstanding of what we are. Those people were responding to something that was very real and very powerful in their life. They were giving out because something was flowing into them. And you and I need to understand that, because the secret to being that kind of person is to have an inflow into our life that is very real, that we are driven to respond to. And I think about 1 John, where John the Apostle, the one who laid his head on Jesus' breast, describes what moves his life in his first epistle. And in our Bibles, it's on page 862. And why don't you turn there, open up, I think there should be one some around. If there isn't one, just take it out of your neighbor's hand. Yeah. We can fight over the Bibles. Anyway, page 862. And so he's introducing his letter here, and he says, "That which was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we have seen with our eyes, which we've looked at and our hands have touched, this we proclaim concerning the word of life. The life appeared, we've seen it and testified to it, and we proclaim to you the eternal life which was with the Father and has appeared to us. We proclaim to you what we've seen and heard, so that you also may have fellowship with us. And our fellowship is with the Father and with His Son, Jesus Christ. We write this to make our joy complete." And I don't know whether there's ever been a time in your life, there certainly has been in my life, where I have known somebody and just seeing that person, watching how they do something, it's like a light goes on and my life changes. And I go, wow, I am different because I just saw that person live life that way. And something opens up for me and my life is bigger because I have seen that. I have a number of people, I've got my list of people that have really impacted me, and that's what's happened with them. They weren't even necessarily trying to instruct me or trying to teach me, but I watched them live their life and I was like, whoa, oh, I just learned something. Who I am just changed watching you. That's what happened to these guys who saw Jesus. Imagine seeing someone who never acts selfishly, who never poses, who never is trying to establish his identity in some false and artificial way. And you follow this life around and you go, oh my goodness, I have seen human life. That's what I was made for. That's what I was made for. And having seen that and followed him and watched him, something was so profoundly different in their life. And what it brought them to is, listen, I have got to tell you about this because my joy can't be complete until I express what I saw to you. I've got to tell you. I saw it. I touched it. We were there. That's what happened to the people who walked with Jesus. And the rest of their life, they were driven to try to imitate it, to try to walk in it, and to tell other people they saw it. They were there. That's what needs to happen to us. Paul writes about that all the time. He never says, go and be good. He says, because of what God has done in your life, because of what you are experiencing, because of what you know, go and respond and live that out. Don't squash it. Don't deny it. Don't ignore it. Let that flow in your life. Walk in it. And that's what you and I have to make a choice to do. And if I were to, you know, try to summarize what's going on in the big picture, because it's really important for us not just to go, okay, I'm going to try to be more patient, I'm going to try to be more kind, I'm going to try to be more good. We need to back up and see the big picture. And this is the big picture. You probably are here, I'm going to make an assumption that might not be true for every one of us, but let's just say that's, you know, what we're here for. You are here because at some point in your life, somewhere, you made a choice and you said, I believe in God. I believe he's there. I believe there's a person that's there. And you may have had good reason for that belief, or you might not. I hardly ever meet anybody who has a who starts their belief for or against God for logical reasons. We can go over to the ASU campus, talk to thousands of students that don't believe in God, and not a single one of them has the slightest thing other than an airhead idea about why they say that. They don't know anything. They just choose to believe it. You choose to believe in God. You chose that somewhere. You said, I believe that. And I also choose to acknowledge my need, to acknowledge the fact that, man, I have real pieces of me that are not right, that are not what they should be. I am less than what I should be. In the Bible vernacular, I'm a sinner. To sin means to fall short of the glory of God. God made me to express his glory. God made me to be perfect. God made me to be amazing. And man, I haven't done it. But I sense I'm supposed to, but I haven't done it. And you chose to believe. So you chose to believe there is a God. You chose to be honest about who you are. And you chose to believe that God is still inviting you into relationship with himself in the person of Jesus Christ. And you accepted that invitation and you crossed a line in your heart. You brought your heart to God and you believed that he accepted it and he received you and you entered into his presence. And that's what you did on your end. On his end, he did a real thing. God's Spirit, the real God who's really there, that person one day you will really talk to, that God brought his Spirit into your life and made you alive in his presence because he did accept you. And for some of us, we saw real signs of that. Lots of times, if you have a point in time that you know about that you receive Christ, a lot of times you'll experience like something that's often called a honeymoon phase, where there's just this excitement and exuberance you can't even explain. And often new Christians will experience that, and I experienced that. And I was just with somebody the other day. You go, and I told this pastor, I said, okay, I mean, the guy is just like this overwhelming exuberance, but you know what? That is a gift of the Spirit, and it will end. He is going to enter back into struggling with alcohol. He's going to enter back into all those things in a period of weeks or months, because what he's walking in is a gift of God. It's a real, tangible. God says, I'm just going to bless your life with myself. And God at times answers prayers for us to reveal himself to us. God wants to say to every one of us here, he wants to say, listen, I don't want you to have any doubts. I don't want you to have any doubts that this is real. I'm going to give you what you need. Now, I'm not going to give you any more, but I'm going to give you what you need to know that I'm a real person that's really here. And then God says, I invite you to walk in this relationship in a world that constantly is oriented toward just wanting to squash it. And there are two roads. Remember that passage in Matthew? Where is it about where the weeds choke out the word? Matthew 13? Let's turn to Matthew chapter 13. This Bible is on page 691. And we'll just read verse 22 on page 691. And if you're not familiar with it, Jesus has told a parable, and now he's explaining it. And in verse 22, it says, "The one who received the seed that fell among the thorns is the man who hears the word, but the worries of this life and the deceitfulness of wealth choke it, making it unfruitful." And so what the Bible tells us is God plants the seed, and it's there, it's there. But there are forces around choking it and just pulling all the life out of it and making it dry and empty. And so in every one of our lives, you have crossed that line. God has made that deposit of truth. And I want you to imagine it like this seed. There's this seed that's planted in you, and it's there, and it's real. And it lives in the garden of your life.